And welcome to The Extra, the show that connects you with the people, issues, and topics that are important to you. And we've been focusing for so many of our shows on the impacts of the coronavirus pandemic. And certainly, it's had an impact on a lot of the attractions and entertainment venues that make our region so unique, so special. One of those entertainment venues, one of those wonderful treasures of the Pikes Peak region, has to be the Cheyenne Mountain Zoo. It is a legacy zoo. It is a zoo that encompasses best practices of zoology. And joining us today to talk more about all the changes that are going on in terms of what's been happening at the zoo, as well as how they are accommodating visitor safety during this time, and animal safety as well, we have the CEO and president of the Cheyenne Mountain Zoo, Bob Chastain, who is joining us. Welcome to The Extra, Bob.
Hi, Shannon. Thank you for having us. We're super excited to share some fun information with you today and important information.
It is important. How long were you closed? I estimate about, was it 6 weeks?
No, it was about 3 months.
Oh, longer. So 3 months of closures. During that time, what sort of actions did you have to take to make sure, because the zookeeping still had to go on, the animals still needed to be taken care of. So what sort of actions did you take to make sure that your workers, your staff were all kept safe, as well as planning for the future when visitors would eventually be welcomed back?
Yeah, that's an important point, because really the planning for that started, we had a senior staff retreat that we have a couple of those a year right before this heated up, and we COVID was one of the topics that we discussed, and so we set some triggers in place where if X happened, we would do Y, and those happened really quickly. But the good thing was is that we had started building some relationships early that allowed us to get designated as an essential business. And so that was the first thing, as we were allowed to continue to come to work. There was no break in the care that we were giving our animals. And then what we did was started various ways as everything started ramping up and we got new information, we were reacting to what the governor said. We were making daily changes through daily community briefings, and we would do those live in an outdoor place if we could, or we would do them via email. And we started taking all the same normal precautions that everyone else did while trying to take care of an animal, run memberships, answer questions about if the zoo is going to be closed or open, all of those things that it takes to run an important community treasure.
Mm-hmm. Certainly. And the animals themselves, I mean, we know that when you have an animal-based business like that, I mean, the care of them doesn't stop just because the pandemic has cropped up. Just because people can't get toilet paper in the grocery stores, they still need to be fed. How did that go with taking care of the animals? And did they miss folks? Did they miss visitors?
Let me answer the first question first. Is I think that people meaning staff, was a little bit skeptical about the concept of animals missing people at first. And one of the things that people, my staff, started saying within about a month was they really do think they are missing people. And then they would go on to say, here's how we know. For example, we would have our orangutans, which are, you know, they're very similar to us. And if they would want attention, they would start banging on things so that the keepers would come back and pay a little bit of attention to them. Our giraffes, every time we walked by and we weren't feeding them lettuce, they would come over and sort of look and see if we would. And so we got to where actually staff had some lettuce out there so that we could have them come over and get some from us. So we have a number of stories that probably would say the animals really did miss having the people around, at least certain animals for sure, and people are an important part of their daily interactions. Mm-hmm. So That was your first question, and then do you want to circle back to the second one?
Yeah, I mean, were your supply chains affected, and was that something you had to be worried about during this?
It was. In fact, we like many nonprofits, have a strategic plan that we work from, and so for a number of years right now, we've been working on making sure that we have an extra supply of things around. So by way of example, just in the last 15 years that I've been the CEO, we had the Waldo Canyon fire that was just not very far, a day's fire, wind push away from the Cheyenne Mountain Zoo. And then we had the Black Forest fire. We had the huge hailstorm a couple years ago. And then now we've had this. And so we've been preparing for what we call a black swan event for a long time. So we actually had enough animal food, enough hay, enough toilet paper. We did run out of hand sanitizer. That became very hard to get. We needed that, of course, when we reopened mostly. We were able to wash our hands as staff, but when we reopened, we needed hand sanitizer. And masks were, as you know, particularly difficult to get. But again, cloth masks were relatively easy to make, and people's ingenuity came out pretty quickly as we got cloth masks for people.
So those were the challenges. And every business, every venue, every location certainly has, you know, its share of stories about that. But this is the Cheyenne Mountain Zoo is certainly a gathering place, if you will, a venue that attracts so many who can pin some of their key developmental times to going to the zoo. You know, I had a young daughter, and pretty much we went about every couple of weeks to the zoo. It was one of those places that you went to. And so for 3 months, like you said, visitors were not able to visit, not able to make that part of their enjoyment, their entertainment. But now the zoo has reopened. Tell us when you knew that you thought you were getting close, how that felt to you and your staff members to know that you were finally going to be able to get the visitors back in the doors and help them enjoy the animals that are your life's work.
Yeah, that process, just to take you back a little bit, was about 3 months long, and we'll just round to that number. And for the first 3 weeks or so, we really thought we would be reopened any day, because obviously we'd never been through this before, and we thought some of the measures were temporary measures. And so we were really thinking day by day that we would reopen again. But after about 2 or 3 weeks, it became very clear that we would not. So I started working with a board member of ours, Stephanie Finley Fortune, who is a key player in our community, and she's been so valuable as a resource for us because of relationships we have. We started working on it for about a month to get open. So when time grew near, it was still weeks away from getting ready to open. We had to get a variance. And for anybody who's not familiar with the variance process, it's very labor intensive, meaning you have to get all three hospitals to sign off. The county commissioners have to sign off. The mayor's office needs to be in support. The health department, including their medical officer, has to be in support. So once even that was done, the state told us it would be about 2 weeks. But once we got that going, and one of the ways that we got that going is people believed, like you did, that the zoo was more like a park and therefore important to people's exercise and mental health. And we do have stories just like you and your daughter of families that come here all the time. And I would want to reiterate just briefly that it's families from young families who have their first infant up to, I know, a couple that must be in their 80s that comes nearly every day to the zoo, and it's part of their regimen. And so we serve a broad range of people, including now about 40% of our guests coming without children.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So you get to that stage, the variance gets granted, but there are so many contingencies that every business is having to make. And being a zoo with the kind of attendance numbers that I know that the zoo gets, especially as you get into the summer months, that had to be very daunting to figure out how you were going to protect all those visitors, how you were going to make sure you had information to do contact tracing and proper sanitation stations all over the place. And so what went into that process, into making sure you were ready from a very, you know, important but very practical stage?
Yeah. Let me first give a shout out to many of our local officials, including the health department, the mayor's office, I mean, the state health department, city council, county commissioners, all of them were super important to that because it took, remember, it can be frustrating when people are shutting you down. I mean, our livelihood of the animals and our livelihood of the staff was affected, but what I sensed pretty early on is those folks had a serious interest in helping the zoo be successful. And so just wanted to say, without them, the quick changes that were happening would not have been able to happen. And so we looked at everything from one-way routing for guests to time ticketing. All of those things we had never done before. And so we were inventing all of that from scratch. And in our software, you think about crazy things like your software won't even allow you to do some of the things that you've been asked to do, to sell tickets every hour or to sell tickets every 20 minutes, which is what we're doing now. So we had to invent all of that. I would say we had one other resource that I would want people to know about. And there's the Association of Zoos and Aquariums that is a group of about 240 accredited zoos across the country. And I was in contact on a regular basis with the directors of those institutions. And so we were all trying to learn from each other together. So for example, one-way routing through the zoo, we chose not to do at the end because many of our colleagues found it actually caused the zoo to be more congested. And so we worked through that with the health department. We had that information and we were able to make last minute decisions that went into our variants that we think helped it get passed.
Mm, okay. So the zoo is open now, and we've been talking about some of the not quite hardships, but definitely uphill challenges that the zoo has faced getting to this point. But there are some exciting developments that we're going to be talking about. We have more coming up with the Cheyenne Mountain Zoo's CEO and President Bob Chastain. We're going to be talking about Water's Edge Africa. And if you haven't seen it yet or haven't seen pictures of it online, you'll definitely want to keep on listening to get that description, because it's going to be an attraction that I think is going to cement the zoo's place in the all-time greatest zoos that exist listing, because certainly it's up there if it's not already tops. 9:21 is your time. You're listening to KRDO's The Extra. We're going to be back with more about the Cheyenne Mountain Zoo after these messages. Welcome back to The Extra, the show that connects you with the people, issues, and topics that are important to you. And today we are talking zoo. Fun times at the zoo, the Cheyenne Mountain Zoo. And we have the CEO and President Bob Chastain who's joining us. And before we went to break, I just gave people a teaser, Water's Edge Africa. Tell us, Mr. Chastain, what is Water's Edge Africa?
Well, Water's Edge Africa is our brand new exhibit that we've been working on for a number of years. And we would have been able to open just right around the time all of this got ramped up, but we were instead able to open right around the same time that the zoo opened. In fact, one of the ways that we thanked our members was we told them that we would open to members first so that they could see that, because one of the things obviously members did that helped us was many of them chose not to ask for refunds for a portion of their year. That obviously saved us money, helped us take care of the animals, and so we thank them by opening the new exhibit for them. But essentially it showcases hippos and penguins, which we both had at the zoo before. not Arctic penguins like people think about from some of the Disney shows, but instead many penguins are from a warm part, and our penguins are from the very tip of Africa down near Cape Town. And so they're from a warm beach area, and so we're showing them, and then river hippos from Africa, as well as a bunch of other animals.
Yes, some of my favorites, lemurs. I love lemurs. They're in there too,
they're
right?
Yeah, they're fantastic.
and you also have a new male hippo, right? Tell us about him.
We do. His name is Biko, and he has just arrived at the zoo. Obviously, one of the ways that we hope the exhibit will continue to be exciting to people is we would like to have baby hippos. One of the things that people don't know about hippos is we have both endangered species here, but we have another category that I call endangered in zoos, and hippos are in that category. There's only about, when we started building the exhibit, about 37 zoos in the entire country that had hippos. And so for the people of Colorado Springs to be able to come and see them is pretty special. And then because of that, they take a lot of space and a lot of water. You don't get to see baby hippos hardly at all because they take space to be able to hold them once they're born, obviously. And so you might have heard when Cincinnati had a baby hippo, obviously it went viral. And so people love seeing them. They're a pretty special creature. And so we're hoping to be able to have young here, and we have built a facility so that we should be able to hold several more hippos. And we're excited about that process. They're just starting to get together right now. They get it together in a process that we call howdy, which is we allow them to see, smell, look at each other, nuzzle each other through their containment barriers, but they don't immediately go together right away until we have good behavioral indications that they're going to be nice to each other and get along well.
So you're hoping love will bloom at Water's Edge Africa.
Yes. That'll be something to see. People might need to shield their children, have them look away when that starts happening.
Well, I don't know. Do they do it in the daytime? Because I know you're close to night. I don't know.
We'll get to see all of that.
And see the young. And that is the goal. Much more about the goals of Water's Edge Africa coming up. We're speaking with Bob Chastain today on The Extra. He's the CEO and president of the Cheyenne Mountain Zoo. We're going to be back with more discussion about Water's Edge Africa, as well as welcoming back the visitors and getting back to some sense of normalcy at the zoo, which has been presiding over the growth of Colorado Springs for so many decades. We're back in just a few moments. You're listening to The Extra on KRDO News Radio. And welcome to The Extra, the show that focuses on the issues, topics, and people that are important to you. And here in this region, one of the places that certainly holds a place, a very significant, important spot in all of our hearts is the Cheyenne Mountain Zoo. Now, newcomers to the area may not realize this, that the Cheyenne Mountain Zoo has quite a history. It dates back to the 1920s, when it was essentially an outgrowth of Spencer Penrose, who founded the Broadmoor. It was his own exotic animal collection that for a while he kept at the Broadmoor until apparently there was an incident between a monkey and a guest that told him that he needed to find another place for the monkeys and the other animals because, you know, if you had lions there, who knows what might happen. I guess might run afoul of them. And so And I may be fudging some of the slight details of that history, but we have Bob Chastain on the line right now. He's the CEO of the zoo. And certainly, I think we can both agree, Bob, that finding the spot and creating the Cheyenne Mountain Zoo, as Spencer Penrose has done and the Zoological Society did after his passing, has certainly been something that set the zoo on the trajectory of greatness that we're now seeing.
Yeah, some people might not know that. So I've been at the zoo 25 years and the CEO 15. About 20 years ago, the zoo looked very seriously about moving the zoo down to flat land because it's so difficult to build up here on the mountain. It's expensive and all those things. And that was before I was the CEO. And I'm so glad that they didn't do that, because obviously one of the things that makes the zoo so special is our location being the highest mountain zoo in the United States, one of the only mountain zoos in the world, depending on how you define that. And so I'm really grateful for that. Sometimes we start exhibit planning by thinking about how are we going to flatten the space out to be able to make it ADA accessible and make it usable for the animals. And then pretty quickly we have to gut check ourselves and remember what's great about the Cheyenne Mountain Zoo is the mountains. And I think you'll see most of our exhibits try to do a good job of providing ADA accessible space for our guests, but also trying to make sure we maintain that mountain experience.
Mm-hmm. And certainly if you have kids, you've heard the complaints from the little kids. Oh, I don't want to walk uphill. So sometimes you'll start at the top and go backwards through the exhibits because that's easier for the little kids to do so. Or else they get the wagon. The wagons are also very popular, I know.
I used to feel really bad when I came to the zoo. The way it was arranged 25 years ago was you might remember you had to come in the gate. And then you walked literally straight uphill by a whole bunch of our hoofed animal exhibits, which kids don't always find the most exciting. So not only were they walking by animals that they didn't find exciting, then they were walking straight uphill. But then when you got to what is currently the top of the zoo now, you actually had the steepest push up the hill to an old carousel and petting zoo. And so if a mom's children wanted to see the petting zoo or the carousel, they literally had to walk straight uphill through the entire part of the zoo. That part of the zoo no longer is open to guests, and so we've saved people that walk.
Well, we appreciate the improvements made along the way. Now it's it's very exciting from the moment you first come through the gate for people of all ages, because you pretty much enter right into the giraffe exhibit right there. But tell us about the planning and the execution of bringing Water's Edge Africa from, I'm guessing, some sort of idea that was had to fruition, to reality.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot going on at the zoo at any given time. Like, for example, right now, we have a new mountain lion cub that we worked with the Fish and Wildlife Service to rescue. It was found in Spokane, Washington, walking along a logging road, and we've been doing videos on that. It's got 1.2 million views. We had a new male giraffe arrive the other day. We just celebrated the birthday of a one-year-old giraffe, Viv. And so there's lots going on at the zoo. But one of the things that is a regular cycle for us is that we try to raise money every 5 to 8 years and try to open a major exhibit as close to every 5 or 6 years as we possibly can. And so the last exhibit, the last series of exhibits we've opened, we opened a new elephant exhibit, and then we opened a new Australia exhibit. Before that, we opened the new Rocky Mountain Wild exhibit. And so one of the things that we look at, obviously, is what needs to be fixed at the zoo. And one of the major goals that we've been interested in from a conservation standpoint is saving water. And so we had a hippo and penguin exhibit that was based on an old design where not only did penguins not get to go outside, but all the water was dump and fill water. And so we started this journey of opening the exhibit about 6 years ago, deciding with the board of directors that the most important issues for us was being able to have baby hippos, because again, you just don't see those. They're unique in zoos, getting our penguins outside, and then saving water. And so we started with trying to think about how to build a home for those animals.
And in building a home for those animals, what considerations went into it?
Well, like I said, again, hippos are not, they're not endangered in the wild, which is amazing, but they are what I call endangered in zoos. And so the big reason why is they take so much space. And so one of the big considerations for hippos, we had three major ones. One is we wanted to have baby hippos. Two is we wanted to be able to have enough various holding spaces so that we could do that. And three is we really wanted to save a significant amount of water and do our part with water conservation. So those were the big ones for hippos. And for penguins, as I said, we really wanted to get them outside. We've had penguins at the zoo for the entire time I've been here, 25 years. We had different types of penguins in the past, but we've had these African black-footed penguins for a very long time, but they had not been able to go outside, so we wanted to be able to get them outside. We wanted to have really clear underwater viewing that we'd never had before with penguins, and then we obviously want to have penguin chicks. We've had a number of chicks here born but not survived. And so, again, back to that, working with the Association of Zoos and Aquariums, we do know that there are people that have the expertise. And so one of the things that we found out through our research was that we had a shared ventilation system with our hippos and penguins, and we needed to be able to separate that ventilation system because penguins can get respiratory problems, separate those, and we think that we'll have successful chick rearing now. So those were our big goals going into this project. And then obviously the zoo, the way that we conserve animals in the wild is we connect people like you and your family with them in a way that compels them to want to do something good. And so up close exhibit views of animals in a variety of great habitats was the big goal.
Mm-hmm. And I think when you mention that hippos aren't endangered in the wild, I mean, I think, well, what animals are endangered, you know, the African animals that we think of that are endangered in the wild, and, it, you know, it's the elephants and the rhinoceroses that have those horns made of ivory, and the poachers have you know, unfortunately taken such a toll on those wild populations. So in some ways, teaching people about hippopotamuses and why they are at least succeeding in the wild teaches the general population about those other animals in the process of it, because you understand that certain animals offer certain things that unfortunately make them targets.
Yeah, and for, you know, the Cheyenne Mountain Zoo enjoys a great national and worldwide reputation. We've been ranked in the top five zoos in the country in various polls, and we've been ranked in the top 20 in the world. And so one of the ways that we do that makes us special is when you come to the zoo, you save wildlife. And we don't just mean that theoretically. Is you might know we have this program where you come in and you vote, you get what we call quarters for conservation. It started out as one quarter, and now it's 75 cents from your admission goes directly to field conservation. That might not seem like a lot of money, but it's over $500,000 a year that we raise through our quarters for conservation projects. And then some portion of that, our members raise a portion of that, so they get to vote on what we do. And you mentioned, I just want to go to this, you mentioned rhinos and elephants. For a number of years, we have a legacy project with a conservation group in Africa that is working with elephants and rhinos. And what we pay for is airplane hours for them to fly over these vast parts of Africa and watch out for poachers. And so just by coming to the zoo, you don't have to do anything else, but just by coming to the zoo, a big portion of your money goes to helping save elephants and rhinos.
Well, that is definitely exciting. And I know very well the voting thing, the quarters for, what do you call it? Quarters for conservation, because, any parents with small children or adults who are going there without children, you know that it is a tough decision. Sometimes you have to decide, or maybe you just vote for them all, but certainly you want to do your part to help all those animals that are striving for existence and to maintain their populations in the wild. It's very exciting. and fun program. And it's so good to hear the amount of money that's actually been raised that's gone to such a worthy cause. We could go on forever, but we unfortunately only have one more segment left. So I'm going to take a break right now, but we'll be back with more with Bob Chastain, the CEO and president of the Cheyenne Mountain Zoo. You're listening to The Extra. And we're joined today here on The Extra with the CEO and president of the Cheyenne Mountain Zoo, Bob Chastain. And Bob, you were talking a while back about the new mountain lion kitten that was rescued after apparently being orphaned in Washington State. And you said there were about 1 million views on one of the videos. Well, now there's 1,000,001 because that is the cutest thing. What a cute little baby. So what's the plan for this kitten? Is it, I assume you're going to rear it, but is it ever going to be able to be returned to the wild, or is it now too accustomed to humans that that just isn't possible?
That's right. With large predators, that can be a challenge. And so we have, you might remember when we opened Rocky Mountain Wild a number of years ago in 2008, we rescued 4 mountain lion cubs. At that time, they were all a part of one group. And if you want to get in a big debate, you can call them cubs or kits. apparently, both is fine, but you could probably get a good argument going over that. But we had 4. And we finally lost our last one about a year ago, and then we got 2 more orphan cubs kits, and then we just got this one. So the plan is to, they're young enough, we think we could reintroduce them together so that we'd have 3 on exhibit, really as a way to kind of just showcase how amazing it is to live in Colorado with some of these large predators. And that's a little controversial, as you know, depending on what side of that you fall on, but for us, we think it's pretty amazing that we live in a state that has enough wild areas and enough tolerance from people that things like mountain lions still can exist here. So we're super excited about being able to see that.
They are things of beauty. And I have to say that the Cheyenne Mountain Zoo exhibit allows you to get really an up close and personal view of them without, you know, them feeling like they're caged. They're very free in that exhibit. And that, for me, is still the only place I've ever seen a mountain lion up close and personal. Whereas I've seen a bobcat, I've seen a moose, but have never seen a mountain lion in the wild. Yeah. And so you're right. That really does bring a new appreciation for those magnificent animals. Right now, all you can say is that is one darn cute little kitten.
Kit. That's for sure. You talked about world-class views of the mountain lion exhibit. In Water's Edge, we didn't talk about this at all, but I just wanted to tell you there's 3 or 4 things that people won't see anyplace else. First is that when you come in, we think we have the first ever infinity edge pool for hippos. and you literally can, they can rest their chins on the edge of the pool and you can be like 5 feet away. And that's pretty awesome to be able to do that. We think we're the only zoo in the world right now that has a walkthrough penguin area, where the penguins can choose to be in a guest area or not, just really similar to our wallaby area. So they have plenty of water to be able to swim in inside and outside. They have the penguin beach because, again, they're from the tip of South Africa. But if you're here at the right time, and some of our guests have been, they may come out and join you on the pathway. It's a good reason to come early. It's a good reason to come late because the animals start moving around at the beginning of the day and the end of the day. And then there's a suspension bridge that if you're willing to take the nature play off-road route to get around to the suspension bridge, you can walk across the hippo exhibit and go into the suspension bridge. All, like you said, trying to get people close enough that they can admire these animals and want to save them.
And have that appreciation that just lasts generations. It really does. The Cheyenne Mountain Zoo, what a treasure that we have in our own community. As you said, nationally, internationally recognized for the work that it's doing for conservation, for creating wonderful exhibits that create magical spaces for these animals. If you would like to visit, don't forget, it is open, but you need to make a reservation. You need to reserve those tickets. So the place to go is cmzoo.org www.ccpa.org/visit, and that will get you to the place where you can find out about how to buy tickets, how to make your reservation. Still a very reasonable experience as far as cost goes. I love how kids two and under, 75 cents, under a buck. That's less than, I guess, the price of a carton of milk, maybe, or right about there. So a wonderful way to get out and enjoy something that in Colorado Springs and the Pikes Peak region is a source of pride for the community. We would like to thank our guest today, Bob Chastain. Thanks so much.
Thank you for having us. And that 75 cents, remember, for those under two goes right to fuel conservation.
Oh, so even better. So there, you're doing a good thing when you're fueling conservation. At the same time, you get those kiddos in to see the fun things, like especially at the Water's Edge Africa. We've been talking about the Cheyenne Mountain Zoo here on The Extra on KRDO News Radio. Thanks to our guest and thanks to our listeners. You have a good day.